This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Crime scenes don't lie, but they do confuse. And the Moscow murders were nothing if not chaotic. Four students killed, two survivors left in shock, and a forensic puzzle investigators are still piecing together. What's clear is this: Koberger didn't walk into that house and glide through like some criminal mastermind. He walked into chaos. Former FBI agent Jennifer Coffendaffer and I dug into this exact point. Was this planned to the letter, or did it unravel the second he stepped inside? Did he intend one victim, only to be surprised by more? Did he spiral from a plan of control into a frenzy of rage? Because here's the thing. Koberger saw those cars outside. He knew people were home. If this was supposed to be a clean experiment, like some have speculated, he failed before he even opened the door. What it looks like instead is rage. Rage at being interrupted. Rage at women who embodied everything he couldn't have. Rage at a life he was not living. That rage connects him back to Bundy, to Rawling, to the archetype of killers who don't just kill, they erupt. They go from planning to frenzy in seconds. And that's what makes this science so terrifying. They thought that he may have walked out shocked himself, realizing he killed four people, maybe more than he ever set out to do. So, Jennifer, when you look at the forensic reconstruction of the witness confusion, at the sheer scale of violence, do you see a calculated killer or do you see rage taking over? Let's get into it.
Yeah, I really think he just ran out of time.
Mm-hmm.
And, I was just reading one of Dylan Martin's report. I still have hundreds of pages to go through, Tony.
Yeah, there's a lot.
I just got hundreds and hundreds. I try to do a report a day.
Mm-hmm.
But basically... She specifically said he looked at her.
Mm-hmm.
Like he knew she was there. At least that's how she interpreted it. And I mean, I think he was worried about getting caught. I really do. I think he wanted to make sure he made an exit. So I think the time that he would have liked to have spent possibly staging, he had to spend cleaning and getting out of there with leaving left the betrayal. I also wonder this, Tony, and I don't know if you've thought about this, but I truly believe his intention was to violate Maddie minimally. But Maddie. And my whole thing is obviously he was very good about not leaving a trail, right? Mm-hmm. A forensic trail. I just wonder what his plan was for regarding that. Was he going to do something like what BTK did, where he would just masturbate beside the body, not interact with it, I think, because of evidence again. So I always wondered if that was going to be his intention. And I still think that that was his probable intention, so as not to leave something behind that could connect him.
The cleaning aspect of this, right? We've seen different takes on this, but it does appear there was some element of cleanup that he attempted to do. What can you say about that from what you've gleaned off of these new findings?
Well, Tony, I tell you, I don't know if you've had a chance to look at the his cell videos.
Yeah.
I posted two of them. But on one, he's meticulously cleaning his Crocs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's wiping them down at the side. And you could tell he is so OCD, which we already knew. We knew that from the trash scenes, from wearing gloves, from all he was doing, obviously, also to conceal his DNA being sloughed off somewhere. But this guy is a clean OCD sort. And so it doesn't surprise me at all, especially with his background in criminology, that he knew he was going to have to clean meticulously after these crimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what do we know about what he did to clean after those crimes at the house? I mean, was there cleanup involved? I mean, obviously he had to get himself cleaned up. But is there any signs that we know of that he tried to do anything. I mean, this was quite a mess that was created there. So any sort of, you know, viable cleanup or any sort of cleanup that would make a really sort of impact was out of the question. But did he do anything?
Well, you know, I don't think he was concerned at all about mm-hmm. their blood spatter or, you know, their mm-hmm. the mutilation of them. He was just concerned about leaving anything behind. Yeah. Lockhart's theory, you know, mm-hmm. you leave behind when you come in, no matter where you go, a part of you. And I think he did a great job making sure that he didn't leave a part of him, except for, as we've talked about, the sheath. And so I you know, I'm just convinced he had multi-layers on and that he disrobed quite easily and put that into some sort of plastic bag. I'm still bothered by this tool that he supposedly left with. I saw another description of it, which described a diamond shaped as cylinder with a diamond shape at the bottom. I know some people, and you even brought up, could it have been the sheath sharpener?
Yeah.
I just don't think it was that, because I don't, the K-bar knife would be so sharp.
Yeah.
But I wondered if she actually saw the K-bar, but drunk at a distance, quickly moving, if the knife would appear to be a cylinder, and then that handle, the way he held it, maybe appeared to be in that odd shape. I don't know, but I'm still digging on that. And hopefully we'll get some of these forensic reports, Tony. I want to see these forensic reports.
Yeah. I'm going to go to the forensic stuff in just a second. But it's fog of war at that moment in time. And when anyone is trying to recall what was going on at that moment, our minds are not playback recorders. It's having to reconstruct everything every time we see it. So it's easy for our brains to try and say, well, I think I saw this. So then it's trying to make sense of what we're seeing. So whatever she saw, whatever she's trying to recount seeing, that's going to be a difficult one, I think, no matter what. And it may not really be, it may be exactly what you said. It may just be the K-bar itself. But in that moment of shock, you're thinking, what is this? Why? You're not even thinking, why is there someone with a knife running through my house? So that's going to be, I think, probably a hard one to crack. If there even is anything to crack, or just a memory that, you know, is blurry, you know, to a certain extent. But yeah, these forensic reports, what are you looking forward to seeing most as they come out?
Well, I know it might sound morbid, but I really want to understand the blood spatter mm-hmm. aspects of all of this. I want to understand, because it still seems confusing, how far out did Zanna come? You know, now I'm reading reports where Dylan thought Kaylee was running up and down the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she seems very convinced. And then later she says words to the effect of, but now I'm not sure if it could have been Zanna from what I know. In other words, you know, she later is listening and talking and gleaning other information. Remember, she initially told investigators that was Kaylee
mm-hmm.
in Zanna's room.
Yeah.
Because she thought Kaylee had gone down there. So there's all this sense of absolute confusion initially as to what she really sees and hears. And a lot of it, she's just hearing.
Yeah.
She doesn't peek out the door to see who's running up and down those stairs. But I believe that a crime scene reconstructionist has put together precisely what they believe happened in terms of Kaylee. Did she come up and down the stairs? I don't know if they're going to be able to 100% tell that. I just want to see all the reconstructionist stuff and all the forensics.
What we take away from this segment is the collapse of the mastermind myth. Koberger wasn't Bundy with a script. He wasn't Rawling with a pattern. He was a man who thought he was in control until reality intruded, until real people screamed, fought back, appeared where he didn't expect them. And in that moment, his plan unraveled into rage. The irony is brutal. He studied these killers. He thought he could do better. Thought he could control the narrative. But control is an illusion in chaos, and chaos is what defines the Moscow murders. Because he planned one victim, Maybe he imagined an essay that never happened. Maybe he thought he could stage the scene into some grotesque message. None of that happened. What happened instead was panic, blood, and a crime scene so messy, it revealed the truth. This wasn't control, it was collapse. And yet, in that collapse, you see a real man. Not the criminology student, not the mastermind, just a fragile, angry, isolated person mistaking rage for power. That's what ties him not just to Rawling, but to Bundy, to every predator who mistook violence for strength. Tell me what you think in the comments section on YouTube. If you're not already there, if you're listening to us on the podcast platforms, thank you. Hit subscribe there. Do check out YouTube. Search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. You can watch us do it all there and comment as well. We do appreciate that. Hit subscribe while you're there as well. Looking forward to your thoughts on this case. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.